today's greatest hits, one to France's credit rating and another to Hewlett-Packard. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update podcast. I'm Jeff Horwich, and it is November 20th, Tuesday. The reported raids on convenience store Twinkie stashes around the country may have been for nothing. We'll get you the latest on that saga. We'll talk about what all these big money political donors are up to post-election, and we'll consider whether there's anything you can really do in the end about your inevitable midlife crisis.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Moody's credit rating agency has removed its top rating from France. The AAA now becomes a AA1 with a negative outlook. Moody's says France is losing competitiveness and it's uncomfortably exposed to the financial troubles of weaker countries in southern Europe. S&P cut its rating for France earlier this year. Sophie Petter is the Paris bureau chief for The Economist magazine, which lately has been accused, in France at least, of fanning the flames a little bit. Good to talk with you.
Pleased to be with you.
So The Economist itself has become kind of a little part of this story. The other day, you ran a cover story calling France the ticking time bomb at the heart of Europe with a bunch of baguettes wired up like sticks of dynamite. It was very clever. What was the very serious point that The Economist is trying to make about France?
I think the concern is about something that has been a long-term loss of competitiveness in the French economy compared with Germany. 10 years ago, the two countries who are the giants in the Eurozone looked pretty comparable. If anything, Germany looked the weaker partner. And over the last 10 years, it's France that has been slipping. Growth has failed. Industrial companies have closed. Jobs have been lost. Unemployment has been up. And the public debt has just kept on rising.
So should we abandon all hope, or are there some very straightforward things that France could and maybe in your view should do to set things right again?
No, I think there are a couple of sources of concern. One of them is about the level of public spending in France. I mean, it's actually higher as a share of the economy than it's even in some of those countries that you probably think of as being sort of high-spending welfare states like Sweden. France spends more than Sweden on its welfare state now, and that share just keeps on going up. I think that France has yet really to get to grips with this and to look at where it can not just find some efficiency gains and a little bit of squeezing around the edges, but really take big decisions about what it can afford to provide in terms of services. And the other thing is mainly to do with its competitiveness and the labour market. France has very strong employment protection, which is obviously great if you have a job, and particularly in the public sector, but it's extremely difficult for companies when times are difficult to be able to respond. And what one is hoping for is that current negotiations, which are underway between the government and employers and the unions, could bring in some more flexibility in that labour market. But it's a big problem in France, and it's extremely difficult to reach agreement on it.
Sophie Petter is the Paris bureau chief for The Economist. Glad to connect with you. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
All right, let's do the numbers. Well, markets are up negligibly at this very moment, but they've been swinging back and forth all day. Who knows what the day may bring? The Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P all more or less flat. The Dow right now at 12,802. Construction of new homes and apartments last month hit the highest rate since July of 2008, another sign of recovery in the housing market. Interestingly, pretty much all that growth in October was in apartments. More bad news for Best Buy. The latest earnings from the electronics retailer show a decline in sales, the latest in a long pattern of declining quarters. The company is hoping for a holiday season turnaround under a new CEO, and they've made a promise that they will match the prices of online retailers. How's it looking for Best Buy on Wall Street right now? Let's see. The stock is down about 11%. Not so good. And perhaps the fat lady has not sung, after all, at Hostess. After filing to liquidate late last week, a bankruptcy judge has told the maker of Twinkies and Ho-Hos to take another run at private mediation with its labor unions. They're going to try to solve its cost problems. So now that the game has changed again, which side might this benefit? Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
In talks like this, bankruptcy attorney Robert Michelson says there's always gamesmanship, each side trying to manipulate the process. But he says by the time they got to liquidation talks yesterday, the gamesmanship backfired.
They both realized that this was going to be one of those situations where everybody wound up losing. So how do you salvage something at the same time? How do you also salvage face?
The 12th-hour mediation has brought new information to the table. One private equity firm is interested in buying Hostess altogether. And there's an outpouring of Twinkie nostalgia, potential signs it may be worth keeping the firm intact. If they can't agree today, Mike Kelly at Brand Value Advisors says it's clear who gets hurt here.
The executive suite will be fine, and those guys can always go out and get other jobs, I would assume. But labor obviously has the most to lose.
As in 18,500 workers filing for unemployment. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Hewlett-Packard says fraud is behind the big quarterly loss that it unveiled this morning. The computing company's writing down $9 billion, partly because of what it calls financial misrepresentations by a company that it acquired last year. The company's called Autonomy. At this hour, HP stock is down almost 11%. Neil McDonald follows HP as an analyst with Gartner. Good to talk with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So almost $9 billion. This is an enormous cost to HP. Do we know much of anything about what happened here?
Well, what HP has stated is that they have evidence of fraudulent misconduct, and that as a result, they overpaid for Autonomy when they acquired them last year for $10 billion, and that they have turned their findings over to the SEC in the U.S. and the equivalent in the U.K. called the SFO for further investigation and possible criminal prosecution.
So it's some combination of fraud and this isn't quite working out anyway.
Exactly. It's a combination of both.
Meg Whitman took over as CEO not too long ago, hoping to put the company on a better course. So putting the fraud aside here, is there any good news to speak of at HP?
Sure. You have to look past the headlines and look into the financials. And there are areas of bright spots that have been overlooked by the headlines. Year over year, revenue's up 14%, and quarter over quarter up 20%, so another bright spot. And in their server division, Hyperscale, which is the cloud component of server infrastructure, also had growth. But as you can imagine, these pockets of growth are overshadowed by the top line, which is all about Autonomy in this $8.8 billion write-down.
And, of course, there are sales of computers and printers and those kinds of things, and not a ton of good news there.
It's good news and bad news. And good news is HP is a leader in printers. HP is a leader in servers. HP is number one or number two in PCs, neck and neck with Lenovo. But, as you've correctly pointed out, those markets are contracting, and HP needs to find new sources of revenues, such as tablets, which HP has launched. But it's too soon to have had an impact in this quarter's earnings.
Neil McDonald is an analyst with Gartner. Neil, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Television these days increasingly shares the family room with the tablets and the smartphones that people keep at their sides at all times. And you might think broadcasters would want your full attention on them. But rather than try to pull you away from your second screens, they're trying to capitalize on them, as Marketplace's Queena Kim reports.
Instead of using your second screen to tune out, Fox Broadcasting wants you to use it to tune in. The entertainment company has created a series of apps that gives you extra content while you're watching TV. For example, while watching X Factor, the popular American Idol-like TV show, you might see backstage shots of the performance on your tablet. On Fox's sitcom New Girl, the network is trying to sell you stuff. David Wertheimer is the president of digital at Fox Broadcasting.
For example, Cece, one of the characters in the show, she'll be wearing a set of bracelets. And
it'll show up on your second screen where you can click and buy it. Scott Steinberg is an analyst at TechSavvy. He says with more TV watchers now second screening it, the networks are trying to capture that momentum. But Steinberg says it's going to be tough.
You have to have the TV. You have to have the smartphone and tablet in front of you. You have to have downloaded the second screen experience app. You have to be active.
And the list goes on. Steinberg says that people aren't tuning into the second screen because they want more of what's on TV. Usually, it's because they're bored. And more content won't change that dynamic. I'm Queena Kim for Marketplace.
And while we're talking tablets here, Oprah is evidently quite a fan of the Microsoft Surface. That's Microsoft's new tablet computer that's running a version of its new operating system. Oprah loves the Surface so much that she has labeled it one of her favorite things, and she's bought a dozen of them for Christmas gifts. We know all this because she tweeted as much, and a lot of people follow Oprah on Twitter. The thing is, tweets come labeled with the device that they were tweeted from, and Oprah's glowing tweet about the Surface came labeled "sent from Twitter for iPad." In Oprah's defense, Twitter does not have its own app yet for the Surface, but as somebody who uses Windows 8 these days, I can tell you there are an awful lot of ways to post to Twitter. So, shame, shame.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
$6 billion were spent on the 2012 campaign, and a lot of that came from big donors. People, PACs, and companies donated hundreds of thousands, in some cases, millions. So what do those donors do now that this election is over? From Washington, Marketplace's David Gura reports.
Plenty of people have already opened their calendars and flipped to November 2014 and November 2016. Adam Liaz is a campaign finance expert with a think tank called Demos.
We're now essentially in one big election cycle.
Liaz says big donors will keep cutting checks. He says they see donations to politicians and to PACs and super PACs as investments.
You know, elections are a means to an end, right? Elections are the most prominent way in which we seek to influence public policy.
But Liaz says, in between elections, there are other ways to influence policy.
Money buys you amplification, and it buys you expertise.
Donors will focus on specific issues like Medicare and the federal deficit. Alan Miller heads the Sunlight Foundation, a group that's in favor of more government transparency.
You know, people don't give money just to elect candidates. That's sort of stage one. They give it to get things.
Maybe an amendment or a piece of legislation. They can also spend money on lobbying.
They can, you know, marshal their forces in their company and get rules and regulations written just the way they want them.
And Miller says that's what she expects many big donors will do. In politics, investors generally get a pretty good return on their investments. Even if their candidate loses, all that spending will influence the winner indirectly.
He or she will be thinking, wow, they're going to come after me the next time. I better be careful what I say. And so it actually has this chilling effect on the general debate as well as on how legislation gets decided.
Miller says big donors may take a short pause, but they're sure to play a big role in what'll be a busy legislative session. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
NHL players and league officials could talk again today. They spoke for a couple hours yesterday, evidently. They're trying to bring an end to the lockout in professional hockey, which is now on day 65. If there's no season, it could mean a big hit to a sport that went through this same thing just 8 years ago. It'll also be a missed opportunity for one hockey town in particular. Jed Kim reports.
There are a lot of things a sports team can do to shore up a fan base. This is a good one.
For the first time in their 45-year history, a Stanley Cup for Los Angeles. The Kings are the Kings.
Nothing brings out fans like winning. Chris Changaris knows this. For 8 years, he and his brother have owned the hockey-themed Redondo Beach Cafe in Southern California, where signed Kings jerseys and posters cover the walls. During the regular season, Chris says they got 20, maybe 30 people in. But come playoff time...
We've got a capacity of about 170, and we were packing it in easily. We had to, on the big days, the cup run, we were literally turning people away, unfortunately.
That hockey fervor was pretty new to L.A. For years, there's been little love left over in this town for the Kings. Courtney Brunius is the assistant director of the Sports Business Institute at USC.
Los Angeles fans generally like great teams, such as the Lakers. You know, they get behind the Dodgers, you know, when they're really good. The Kings haven't had that history of being that really great team.
But now they are that really great team. And this post-championship season was supposed to build their fan base. That's important when you consider that last season, the NHL took in a record $3 billion. There's a lot of money for established franchises. Unfortunately for the Kings, the lockouts already kept them from capitalizing on their win.
Opening games, the raising of the banner, you know, everybody having the excitement about seeing the Stanley Cup again, you know, all of that leading up into the season was washed out by the lockout.
Back at the Redondo Beach Cafe, Chris is confident that fans will be there if and when the season starts. He talks about a dynasty.
I can't wait for them to drop the puck again. I can't wait to be a part of it, to watch them move forward, because it's pretty special.
It'll also mean getting more fans into the restaurant. Right now, most of the seats are empty. In Los Angeles, I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
And finally here, what causes so many of us to hit a midlife crisis? Is it the mortgage, the marriage, the realization that time is running out and our dreams of career, personal, and financial fulfillment are slipping away? Or maybe it's in our genes. A paper published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences finds compelling evidence of a midlife crisis in apes. Results from more than 500 captive great apes around the world found the same midlife drop in mood that has been documented in humans. Now, the poor apes, of course, they can't go out and buy a Mazda Miata to cope with it. On the positive side for them, though, they definitely do not need hair plugs. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.